Chapter 3. Thomas feels a hand cover his mouth as he is nudged awake. In wide-eyed terror, the prince struggles to writhe free from a cloaked man holding him down.
"If you don't want these people to kill you, then you must come with me now," proclaims the stranger.
Who we can trust right now? The queen's words echo in Thomas's thoughts. He relaxes his body, and the hooded person instantly covers the prince in a cloak and picks him up. After quickly throwing Thomas up onto his back, the stranger takes out a throwing knife while running and throws it behind him into the trees, making a man scream out in agonizing pain.
"Should be around here somewhere. Don't let them escape!"
A gruff man's voice fades as the stranger carrying Thomas quickly breezes through the trees and rocks away from their pursuers. Like a wild beast, the hooded man barrels through the forest with great stealth. Stopping only for a brief moment to tie Thomas to the stranger's back with a rope, they set off again. Securely fastened to his carrier, Thomas removes the blanket from his eyes and sees the forest blur by him as they move silently through the trees. After they travel a decent distance away from danger, the cloaked person stops and unties Thomas from his back. Sliding down from the man's back, Thomas looks at him with fear and curiosity, while slowly backing away.
"You need to be able to disappear in the blink of an eye," says the man as he wraps up his rope and places it in his bag.
Sounding slightly out of breath, the stranger takes a big gulp of air. Thomas does not offer a response to the statement, but nods his head instead. Still awestruck from the man's appearance and demeanour, the prince cautiously waits to see what will happen next. The stranger's outfit resembles that of a coyote or a wolf, with a dark cloak to conceal his face. Just then, the howl of a wolf rings out across the early evening sky. The prince shudders as the howl fades with the wind. The strange man takes a pouch out from under his cloak and drinks from it. After a couple of swigs, he wipes his mouth and hands it to Thomas. The prince springs to his feet to retrieve the pouch and instantly feels a deep pain in his shoulder from reaching his hand out. He quickly recoils his arm and coddles it protectively.
"Let me see your arm," demands the stranger. "Take your arm out of your shirt," insists the man.
Thomas slowly pulls his injured arm from his shirt.
"Can you move your arm like this?"
asks the man, demonstrating how he wants Thomas to maneuver his arm. The pain slightly flares up, but not too much to bear as the prince performs the requested movement. The stranger continues to survey Thomas's shoulder while the prince moves it around for him.
"How does it feel when I touch here?"
asks the man, poking a spot on Thomas's shoulder.
"It hurts a little," Thomas proclaims, wincing from the pain. "I know it hurts, but it looks like you will heal just fine,"
he states optimistically as Thomas puts his shirt back on. The stranger hands him the pouch of water again. Slowly this time, Thomas reaches out and grabs the pouch, guzzling from it.
"That's from a good source," the man says with a chuckle in his voice.
The water hitting Thomas's lips is the best he has ever tasted in his life by far. The crisp, clean and refreshing liquid satisfies Thomas's thirst instantly, but he cannot pull away, greedily draining the pouch. Standing by watching, the stranger laughs to see Thomas drinking so vigorously.
"My name is Troy," states the man, pulling the hood from his head, revealing his face.
The stranger is much bigger than Thomas, but with a face of an older teenager. Seeing how young the man is makes the prince relax a bit. Shaggy, thick, dark hair falls down to his eyebrows and over his ears as Troy waits for a response.
"I am Thomas," the prince responds quietly.
The stranger stares at Thomas, studying him.
"Where are you going?"
Troy asks, with a look of skepticism on his face. The prince looks down to his feet for a brief second and then looks back to the stranger.
"The fishing village to the north,"
Thomas replies unenthusiastically. Troy looks past Thomas with a concentrated, far-off expression on his face.
"Do you have family near the fishing village?"
the young man pries. Thomas cringes at the question, but draws a deep breath, holding back the urge to cry, and answers with,
"My parents are dead."
Troy takes a step back and resumes his studying of Thomas. Turning away from the stranger, the prince is unable to prevent a few sobs from slipping out of him, with his chest fluttering with the spasm of his lungs. Wiping a few escaped tears from running down his cheek, Thomas turns back to Troy. With Thomas's chest still sputtering from the rogue whimpers,
Troy walks over to him and tries to console the young child. "Take deep breaths," the young man says to Thomas as he pats him on the head. This helps the prince calm down, and he regains control of himself again. "Well, now that I know that your name is Thomas, who are you?" Troy inquires, still sceptical of the lone, small boy. The prince quickly darts his gaze to meet the young man's eyes and contemplates telling him who he really is. A look of even deeper suspicion washes over Troy's face. After a moment of consideration, Thomas puffs his chest out, taking a deep breath, and proudly declares, "I am Prince Thomas, son of King Barton of the Western Kingdom." Without response, Troy diverts his gaze as the weight of what Thomas says settles on him. "The king and queen are dead. How?" the young man asks with a blend of surprise and concern in his demeanour. "They were murdered," Thomas replies with bitter sadness in his voice. "I am truly sorry for your loss," Troy says, offering his condolences. "The river and fishing villages are not safe places right now because of increased activity from the South Mountain merchants." Thomas says nothing as Troy begins walking north. Confused and alarmed, the prince watches anxiously as he gets farther away from him. "I think you should come with me, but it's up to you," Troy calls back over his shoulder. Without hesitation, the prince leaps into action, quickly running to catch up with the young man that saved his life. Troy smiles at Thomas and ruffles his brown hair as the two of them make their way north along the river, deeper into the forest. Troy slithers effortlessly through the dense trees and bushes, leading Thomas behind him. After a while, they come to a boulder that is blocking their path. Troy lifts Thomas up on top of the boulder, and the prince easily scales down the other side. Down on the other side of the boulder, Thomas looks back to the large rock, waiting for his chaperone to climb over. As if floating up the boulder, Troy lands gracefully on top like a big cat. Just as light-footed as he climbed up, he descends the boulder. "The merchant ship sailors have been searching the riverbanks for unsuspecting victims for a while now," Troy explains as he leads the prince along the trail. Thomas says nothing, but keeps pace with the young man. "So, we must always be on alert," the young man continues speaking. After walking for almost an hour in silence, Troy stops dead in his tracks and perks up, listening for something that interests him greatly. Thomas stops just behind him, looking for any sign of movement in the trees around them. "Get down now," Troy commands. The sound of men yelling faintly fills the air and catches Thomas's attention. Travelling upstream, a boat slowly creeps into their view. Thomas nervously jostles about as Troy squints his eyes, with his gaze fixed on the approaching vessel. Downstream, the ship is close enough for Thomas to see that it is multiple little boats, travelling closely to each other. Confused by what he is seeing, the prince looks to Troy and is about to speak, when Troy looks at him with his finger over his closed lips. Having just had his question quelled, Thomas shrinks back, observing the strange boats silently. "Don't move or make a sound," Troy whispers in an urgent tone of voice. Battling up the river, opposite the natural flow of the water, the boats are being paddled by men using their legs to turn large wheels that propel the crafts through the water.
"I have never seen anything like that before," Thomas subconsciously whispers out loud.
"Hush," Troy says with an irritated sounding whisper, throwing his cloak over both of them as the boats pass by. Exhaling after holding his breath a few seconds too long, Thomas tries to control his breathing, despite the tremendous terror he feels inside. Marching up the river, the boats paddle out of sight.
"They may have people on both sides of the riverbank, searching for anyone or anything of value," Troy says with a look of uncertainty, nodding to the prince.
Thomas understands the meaning, regarding his title and birthright, but says nothing, still embarrassed about his error moments ago. On full alert, Troy covers Thomas with one of his cloaks, and makes the prince hard to see as he blends in with the forest around him. All shades of green and brown blend seamlessly together on his tunic, making Thomas feel wild and brave. A few finishing touch adjustments and he's wrapped tight in his evasive attire. Troy then covers his nose and mouth with a mask, then motions with a side nod for Thomas to follow him. The young man crouches low and slips into the thick forest, disappearing from view. Thomas bounds right after him as silently as he can, making their way through the dense trees and rocks. The sun hangs low in the evening sky. After crossing a few hills and valleys, Troy stops walking,
pulls out his pouch of water and hands it to Thomas. The young prince graciously accepts the offering and drinks from it.
Save me some, Troy requests playfully.
Feeling sheepish from chugging the special water earlier, Thomas shies away after getting a good drink and handing it back to the young man. Troy takes the pouch and empties the rest of the water into his mouth, recorks the pouch and puts it away under his cloak. After a few minutes of rest, they resume their journey.
We'll come to a bridge a little farther upstream, but we can't cross it until late tonight,
Troy states as he holds a branch out of the prince's walkway. With a nod of his head, Thomas acknowledges the young man's statement. Making it about a mile farther up the river, Troy stops in a thick patch of bushes surrounded by towering trees.
The bridge is just up ahead, so we'll stay here until it's safe to cross, Troy declares.
Thomas slumps down against the trunk of a tree, encased by thick shrubs next to his new friend. Twilight barely reaches down to the forest floor where they wait, hidden. Sitting in silence, Troy stares ahead, appearing to be deep in thought. Relaxed after an exhaustingly stressful day, Thomas closes his eyes. Soon, the prince slumps over, resting his head on the young man's shoulder, and drifts off to sleep. It's pitch black when Thomas opens his eyes again. Feeling rested, he looks over at Troy, who seems to have not moved since sitting down earlier.
We must go,
the young man whispers, standing to his feet. After tightening a couple of places on Thomas's cloak, Troy leads the way out of the bushes. The spring night air chills Thomas, but the cloak keeps him surprisingly warm. The prince feels like they're gliding through the trees and over rocks, effortlessly travelling down the game trail. A short distance up the river, and around a bend, a bridge comes into view. Staying hidden in the darkness, they stop and observe the area. From their point of view, the bridge is shaped like a T, with three entrances. Troy looks up and down the river to see if anyone is coming. A moment passes, and then Troy sneakily steps out from the trees and into the open. Thomas follows close behind as they make their way silently toward the crossing. The glow from the lantern's light of the bridge grows as they get closer to them. Just before they enter the halo of light, they stop for one last look around for danger. Seeing that it is clear, they crawl into the light, crouched down low. Moving on all fours, Troy creeps along the bridge's side rail, attempting to remain as inconspicuous as possible. Thomas doesn't have to crouch down quite as far to get as low, so he easily stays out of view of the surrounding area. As they get a little farther along the bridge, Thomas sees where the bridge comes to a T up ahead. Few lanterns light this bridge, and the platform slightly squeaks under their shoes as they crawl across. Just then, a horse pulling a wagon comes onto the bridge behind them.
Run!
Troy growls and grabs Thomas's arm to pull him quickly across. Racing to the intersection, they quickly turn left through the light of a lantern. The wagon swiftly makes its way rapidly toward the fork in the bridge. Running as fast as they can, Thomas sees a second wagon enter the bridge, heading right for them. Troy stops running, grabs a rope and a metal hook out of his bag and ties it around himself. Troy quickly grabs the prince, ties Thomas to his back, climbs over the side rail and reaches down to connect the hook to the bottom of the bridge platform. Turning left at the T, the first wagon gets closer and closer, with the second wagon quickly approaching as well. After a quick test of the rope's strength, Troy begins to walk down the side of the bridge and out of sight, with Thomas hanging on with all of his might. The wagons come to a stop almost directly in front of where Troy and Thomas are suspended from the bridge. The drivers of the carriages both climb down from their chairs and open the doors for their riders to exit. Troy adjusts his grip as his hand slightly slips on the rope, giving Thomas a fright.
"It is done!"
triumphantly declares a man's voice from the first wagon. Troy shimmies down the rope another foot or so, trying to get farther out of sight.
"The entire west and south is now ours," boasts the man from the second wagon.
This piques Thomas's interest, and he continues listening to the men's conversation closely.
"For your services,"
says the man from the first wagon, as the sound of coins jingling in a wooden chest slams onto the ground.
"Aha, our services will always be available for you,"
the man says energetically from the second wagon. The two men laugh and slap each other on the back and shoulders in celebration. Troy's foot slips as part of the stone from the bridge crumbles and falls to the river below.
"What was that?"
asks the man from the first wagon.
"What was what?"
replies the man from the second wagon as he loads the chest of coins into his wagon with his driver. Without wasting any time, Troy climbs down the rope a couple of feet farther
and then reaches to the beams under the bridge.
I heard a big splash,
the man from the first wagon persists.
I heard nothing like that,
exclaims the man from the second wagon, as the sound of him climbing under his carriage squeaks into the air.
We'll meet again at the celebration,
the man from the second wagon calls out as his driver snaps the reins, sending his horses in motion. Troy lets out a soft grunt, dangling from the bridge, struggling to hold up his and Thomas's weight. After a few agonising moments, the first man finally climbs back into his carriage and signals for his driver to go. Thomas lets out a deep sigh, and a flood of relief washes over him.